This RFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hello, good evening, and this is Arrow FM. This is Y Lanka, and today, so I am Moksara, and today I have a special guest. His name is Avindu. Nice to meet you, Avindu.
Hello, nice to meet you too.
Yeah. Oh. And so Avindu is like a criminal lawyer, and today is a very special day for us because yesterday Sri Lanka just had their like Sinhalese Tamil New Year, and so it's like we celebrate our New Year on the 14th of April, and
is that every year?
Or every year.
But not specifically on the 14th every year, right? It's like, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it every year on the 14th?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Every year on the 14th.
Right.
Yeah, and we celebrate that on the 14th of April. And so today, so the difference in the time zone, so today is the New Year for us. As the Sinhalese Tamil New Year for the Sri Lankan and Tamil community in New Zealand. And so today we'll start off by giving you guys like a, and to those who don't know, start off by giving you guys an idea of like what the Sinhalese Tamil New Year is. So when the Meena Rashiya goes to the Mesha Rashiya, so it's like an astrological thing. So in astrology, when the Meena Rashiya goes to Mesha Rashiya, that's like that time is when we have like when the sun transits from one astrological sign, from Pisces to Aries. So Meena Rashiya is Pisces and Mesha is Aries. So when it transfers from Pisces to Aries, that's like the Aluta Rudda. And that's like the basis for that, and that's the basis. And we celebrated it yesterday on like the Sri Lankan community got together, and we had this Audu festival. Were you there at the Audu festival yesterday?
In the morning.
Oh yeah, you were there. Yeah, you were there. We had the games.
Yeah, we had two separate events.
Yeah,
you were there at both.
Yeah, I
saw you both, yeah. I have a question. You said that the New Year starts when the sun goes into, from Pisces to Aries, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, I don't really understand how that, does it mean the sun start? Like, I don't understand what's the sun, is there... When you say the sun comes into the new constellation, what does that mean?
So, like, so basically, Alutaud is based on like an astrological belief,
yeah,
right? That the new year begins when the sun transits from one astrological sign to another one, right? So, specifically from Pisces to Aries. So that transition, beginning to the end, that's the new year for us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll have to look into that because I don't know where the sun's position is. Like, I don't have a good understanding of the
astrological thing. Yeah,
yeah, but I'm not sure if the sun starts at a certain location.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit confusing.
But
it sounds like when we go from Pisces to Aries.
Yeah, yeah.
The new year starts.
Yeah, and so we celebrated this. So our Sinhalese community, we came together. What was that place that we held the...
At a school.
Yeah, at a school. Yeah, was it Makrapali?
I don't know.
Is that the place? It was like, it had a ground.
Mm.
Yeah. So we held it at that place, and we had like different games. So we had the Kanamuti Bidima. So you like hang some pots on a string, right? And then we blindfold the guy, right? And we turn him around many times, so he's disoriented as hell. And then he just send him down with a big stick. So what he has to do, he has to remember where those things are, and he has to just go blindfolded to the place and like whack that thing off. Mm. And that's what he does. And then one guy was able to like wreck it out, right?
Mm.
Yeah, one guy, and did another one do it? Yeah, two people were successful this time.
Yeah. One guy hit the pot directly, and the other one hit the rope.
Yeah. Both and then that one hit the rope, and then just flung off. Yeah, so we had games like that. Last time, I think we had Kottapur, but this time we didn't have Kottapur, didn't we?
What's that?
Kottapur is like taking, like, so two guys sit on two wood logs like this,
mm-hmm.
and like a triangle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then on top there's like a log,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And two people sit like this, right?
Yeah.
And they take pillows, mm-hmm. and they hit each other, and one guy falls off. The guy who's still on is the winner.
Right.
Right?
Are they like, do they turn or the logs? And they're not turning.
No, much.
They're just hitting each other off the logs.
Yeah. And they just sit on like this, you know, facing each other.
That would have been a good game.
Yeah.
Should we play
that? So we had that last time. This time we didn't have
it. Should we play that right now? No, we don't have pillows, do we?
We don't have the place for that. No. We...
Cool. Did you enjoy the celebration?
That was fun. And we had we have like the Alutau, the Kavili, like Kiribat. We had, Kiritopi? Yeah, we had some of that. And then Kaung, Mungkaung, and that kind of stuff.
What are those things?
Those things are like...
Just so the listener, if there are listeners that don't understand,
Can
you explain that?
I forgot to talk about that. My bad. Kaung is like, think of, how do you explain it, Kaung?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's like it's like a soft, bready, but it's not bready. It's
like a cake.
Yeah,
but sort of.
Not really a cake.
Not a cake either.
It's made out of. It's made with jaggery, right?
Mm.
Infused with jaggery. So jaggery is like a special sweet in Sri Lanka, and I believe, I understand that it's derived from palm tree sap. Is that correct?
Palm
tree sap.
Palm tree. It's kitul.
Yeah, isn't that the palm tree?
Don't know. Not kitul tree is something else. Not it's palm tree. Kitul tree can't make palm oil. Like the palm tree is different from the kitul tree. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's from the kitul tree. So jagger is from the kitul tree, and it like makes the stuff to. And then you, I don't know exactly how you make.
Yeah, they must process it.
Yeah.
Kittle tree, I didn't know that. Okay, I'm just going to look it up.
Yeah, just looking up.
Because,
I'm quite sure it's the kittle tree.
Caryota urens. Oh, it's a species of flowering plant in the palm family.
Yeah.
So I was right.
You did the win.
But, no, you also right, because it's a special type of, it's a species of the palm.
Yeah.
Native to Sri Lanka. So Sri Lanka would have a lot of these palms, and I'll just show you a photo. It's not a very good photo, actually. So, they grow in the fields and rainforest clearings. This is according to Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
It is regarded as introduced in Cambodia. The epithet urens is Latin for stinging, alluding to the chemicals in the fruit. Common names in English include solitary fishtail palm, kittle palm, jaggery palm. Its leaf is used as fishing rod after trimming the branches of the leaf and drying. Okay, so I'm going to guess that the kithel comes from the tree sap of this special species of palm tree.
Yeah.
Which is what I...
Kithel does kithel sap.
Mm.
It comes from that kithel tree, yeah.
That's pretty cool because
like
the jaggery is quite sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it comes from the sap is interesting. But yeah, I don't know how they process it.
Yeah, that's the question. Like, don't know like exactly like, how they process and
how
like
create
make that stuff. Mm-hmm. So anyway, like the kaung, I think the best thing to do is like show an image of Konda kaung.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like you can't explain it Is it? It's something in between a dumpling and a cake.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't taste like a dumpling, but it looks like one.
Yeah. It looks like a dumpling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, it looks like this. Let me get it.
Yeah, it looks like a Beyblade. Yeah. It looks like a Beyblade.
Yeah. Like a Beyblade. So this thing. Oh wait, that one. My bad. Yeah.
Switch the camera.
Just switch the camera. We should bring the camera.
We could have brought in one because we have so much at home.
Yeah.
So many sweets.
Yeah.
That's one of the main creations during this time is like people make a lot of sweets.
Yeah, yeah.
To enjoy. I'm just gonna switch places because like the camera's blocking half your face. So I'll sit over here.
Yeah.
Actually, I'll sit over here.
Yeah.
How's that? Is that good?
That's great.
That's
right. Yeah.
That's better.
Right, yeah. So we just celebrated that new year. And so I think I didn't introduce Avindu to you guys much, did I?
Oh, you briefly did.
Yeah, briefly.
Yeah.
Like you're a criminal lawyer.
Oh, man, I don't like to attribute that to my... I mean, yes, I am, but yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do criminal defense. Yeah, my name's Avindu. Mm-hmm. Thank you for having me. Mr. Moksara.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do criminal defense, which is good. It's interesting. Mm. I've come down to Masterton for the weekend because to celebrate the New Year, Sinhala New Year.
Yeah.
I've recently moved to Levin, so I didn't want to. Yeah, I wanted to spend it with people that I knew, and a mutual friend of ours invited us. Oh, invited me to stay with her in Masterton. So I'm really enjoying Masterton. It's a really nice place. It's a beautiful place, and the people are really cool. I think the people are really nice. And the one thing that I notice is just, I don't know, the air just feels clean. The air just feels fresh. Not to say Levin is not fresh or anything, but I'm used to living in cities most of my life. Is it Michael?
Yeah.
I'm used to living in cities my whole life. I've lived in Auckland for like 20 years. And I don't know. I think Masterton's a nice place. So anyone listening to this, you're living in a nice place. That's my assessment after, say, 2 days in this area.
Oh, so I came in at the end of 2020. One or two? Wait, 2022 was my level two. No, 2023 was level two. 2024 was level three. So yeah, end of 2022, I came to New Zealand from Sri Lanka, right? Yeah. Got citizen, got visa, right?
Yeah.
And then recently I got permanent residency.
Yeah.
But we just came to New Zealand and we went to school here. I enjoyed the school. Oh, yeah, thanks. Better lights. Yeah, those are dark.
Let there be light.
Yeah, let there be light. So, yeah.
Graffiti.
I came to New Zealand like when... how old was I then? So right now I'm 18. And it was 2 years ago. So that's like when I was 16, came to New Zealand. And the rest of the 16 years I was in Sri Lanka. So, and then... when I was like 1 year old, 1 or 2 years old, I spent some time in like England, in UK, because my mom had to move there to do her PhD.
Right.
And
what did she do a PhD in?
In botany.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
You told me yesterday that your mother is looking into mushrooms.
Mushrooms, yeah.
Mushroom, a certain type of mushroom species that grow on invasive plants in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, yeah.
And that it's quite a nutritious type of fungus, right?
Yeah.
And she's trying to utilize it as food.
Yeah, yeah.
Which would be good because these invasive species, as I understand it, grow so, quite frequently.
So there's an invasive species of like, it's like a grass, right? And this grass, like you can find it in like railroads and those kind of places. Like it grows everywhere. Mm. Like the road that leads to our house, it's always on the side of that road. Mm. And then like on the sides of roads, on like railways, on like, it's just everywhere. it grows on like dry soil.
Mm.
It's like a big grass also.
Mm.
And so if we could like use that as a substrate,
yeah,
you know, to make mushrooms, mm, you got like lots of substrate then. That's going to be like, yeah.
Invasive plant species.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, good luck to your mother. She's working on that right now, right?
Yeah, she is working on that and like many other things. Like she's getting her students to, you know, get things, few projects done and yeah.
All right. Well,
kind of stuff.
I'm sure she's going to do well.
Yeah. Are you already like practicing criminal law or are you still like in the studying phase and like...
No,
you
know? I've been practicing criminal law for almost 3 years now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's been a interesting 3 years.
Yeah.
I had a question for you. How does... So you lived in Sri Lanka for 16 years and you moved to Masterton in the last 2 years?
Yeah.
How does Sri Lanka compare to Masterton?
Sri Lanka compared to Masterton. Okay, so in Sri Lanka, of course it's hotter, right?
Mm.
Hotter, much more humid, right?
Mm.
And you have like more stray animals.
Yeah.
But then here, I think here you get like a lot more roadkill because I haven't seen that much roadkill in Sri Lanka.
Which is surprising considering how many vehicles there are, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I do see a lot of roadkill as well here, but...
Okay. But it's not the roadkill, you know, comparing places with roadkill.
Oh, it's a good... It's one thing to compare.
Yeah, one thing. But, you know, so in Sri Lanka, it's more busy. Here, it's less busy.
Hmm.
You have... a wider city here, but then the Sri Lankan city is huge and more compact.
Mm.
But it's not like super compact all over the place, you know.
Mm.
Some places are stuffy, other places are like really like spread out. And
are you talking about Colombo?
Yeah, Colombo. Yeah.
So I wonder how Colombo compares in terms of like area compared to Masterton.
Mm.
I know that Colombo is not that big, but it is quite densely populated.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested to know how big it is compared to Masterton. I know in Masterton, I learned this from Mr. Gordon today, that Masterton has a population of 29,000, but the area seems quite large.
Yeah. So I'm searching it up.
I think Sri Lanka has a population of about 22 area. Million, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the land area million. Is quite small. It's a smallish island.
Colombo area.
Off the southern coast of India.
Oh, Colombo area in square kilometers. Oh, it doesn't show. Oh, wait. 699 square kilometers. Shall we compare that to Masterton?
Yes, please.
Yeah, Masterton.
699 square kilometers. I wonder if I can write in this piece of paper.
Masterton.
This book.
Masterton.
I want 699. Let's say 700. Seven Masterton. Is a lucky number.
Oh, Masterton has more. Masterton has 2,300
square kilometers. Whoa, all right.
So it's...
2,000.
Twice more. No, not twice.
More than three times.
More than
three times. Okay, so, wow. 2,300 square kilometers.
Yeah, yeah.
Masterton. Wow. Okay. Interesting.
But I'd say like...
What's the population? What's the population of Masterton?
Population...
Sorry. Masterton is 29,000. What's the population of Sri Lanka? I believe it's 22 million, but I don't want to make assumptions.
Yeah, it is 22 million.
22 million?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So if you compare Sri Lanka is... Colombo is... what's the population of Colombo?
Colombo population? Let me get that up. Colombo... And it's like 642,000.
642,000. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So 642,000 people compared to 30,000.
Yeah.
Wow. And for like a third of the size.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
So like it was 600,000 kilometers, 600 something thousand kilometers in size. It has 642,000 people.
Yeah.
So that's like almost one person per kilometer.
Mm.
Yeah. One or two people per kilometer.
Yeah. So 700 kilometers squared.
Yeah.
642,000 people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Almost one person per square kilometer, which is not a lot of space.
But anyway, like, you know, so that's the that's one thing about that place. And then it even in the night, like here at night, I've seen like it's not that busy, like, you know, there's a lot of space in the road and all that, but in Colombo it's like very always busy. It's like Las Vegas almost, that that level of busyness, you know. And
have you been to Las Vegas?
Nah, but you know, we have a picture about how the place is, you know.
Making assumptions. Don't make assumptions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
it,
yeah,
it is quite busy at night.
Yeah. And yeah.
All right.
It's cool. Just so like
and also another thing that I heard about the new year.
Yeah.
Actually, no. What were we gonna say? I'll let you say what you're gonna say.
Oh, I was just gonna ask you like how was like your practicing law, criminal law, like what do you do in criminal law?
Oh, so what I do in criminal law. Okay, so when someone is charged with an offense,
yeah,
I will represent them, and what that means is explaining to them what. So the police charge someone. So let's say Moksara, you were to steal. Let's say you were to steal something from this studio, right? And I reported you to the police.
Yeah.
I was like, Moksara stole that beautiful vinyl player in the background.
Yep.
Then the police may accept my version of events. It might look at cameras and they will, may charge you with theft.
Yeah, yeah.
Based on how much the value of it is. You'd be summons to go to court. Either you, or you'd be arrested.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably won't be remanded in the cells because it's not that serious.
Yeah, yeah.
But you'd be summoned to go to court.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, when you go to court, you're given a you're given a charging document, summary of facts. It's a very daunting process. It can be a very daunting process.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't understand a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to think that I understand it. I mean, I think I do understand it. But my job is to explain what's happening to hypothetically Moksara when he gets charged.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that you do. This is just an, this is just an example, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I got to explain, first of all, what the charge is, what my advice would be to you. I would read the summary of facts, and then I would... So the summary of facts is what the police say has happened.
Yeah.
And I'd speak to you. I'd be like, Moksara, tell me what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you might say, oh, Avindu actually stole it, stole the vinyl player, and he has told the police that it was me. And then
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I
would say.
I don't want to get too confused.
Because that's not me. That's not me in the footage, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
These people think everybody looks the same.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, so you come to me and you're like, hey, someone else took it.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone else took it.
Yeah.
And then I'd say, okay, well, in that case, you should plead not guilty. And you should, you know, maybe we can get some CCTV footage, see what's happened. And then you would either go to trial or we resolve it.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically, I explain what the process is. And I give advice based on what you say, what the police say. So there are two sides, the police versus the defendant.
Yeah.
And I would, like, weigh it up and I'd be like, hey, this is my assessment of the strength of your case, the strength of their case. If I think that the police case is strong, and let's say you admit to it, I'd be like, okay, so this is what I think you should do. There are different options available to you. For example, if you're young and you've done something stupid, like off the cuff, stolen some stuff, but you don't want a conviction on your record, but you can like, you can make an application to keep your record clean.
Yeah.
But I mean, you got to put in some work, right? And you got to you got to accept responsibility.
Yeah.
You got to say, hey, man, this is why I did this, and you got to explain why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you were just, I don't know, maybe if you're starving and you wanted to sell it, and you, but like, I mean, there's no excuse, but there's context.
Mm-hmm.
So I would work through that with the client, see what the issue is. You know, if you don't have any money, I'd be like, hey, man,
do you defend the client?
You're a young man. Get a job. You know, like, come on, man, you're a fit young guy. Don't sit on your ass and steal stuff all the time. Sorry, I don't mean to say swear, but
it's
not actually swear word, but.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. But like, do you, so do you like defend the client?
If they tell me they didn't do it, so if you come to me and say, no, I didn't do, I didn't steal that, someone else did, then I'll defend you. I'll say, okay, let's go to court. Let's say, no, you didn't do this.
And then you just take the information, and then you're like, and then they argue, so the prosecutor versus you. So
us, the defense.
Yeah, so you listen to their side, like, no, they do the accusations and do that, and then you take information from me and you lawfully argue that in the court, and then I'm in the box-like thing, right?
Sometimes you go in the box, in the dock.
Yeah, in the dock.
But yeah, my job is to assess the prosecution case.
Yeah.
So they present, they bring evidence to support their accusation, and I would assess your evidence.
Yeah.
So if the accusation from the police or the prosecution is that you have stolen it, but there's no cameras in it. Or let's say there's a camera in here, and they haven't got the footage from the camera. See these cameras here?
Yeah.
Maybe this is recording. You know, when it swivels back, it might have caught it on camera. So I would say, if the police haven't got it, I would ask, can I get the footage from this camera? Can I see what's happened?
Yeah.
Can I see if Moksara took it? Did some other random roguish bandit with an orange t-shirt take it? You know, like the cameras could have captured it.
Now that you mentioned, then they're paying more attention to you, you know?
Yeah, no, they're not on me now. No, they should be on you to watch the final. But, so I would ask for that, and I would look. I would say, look, let me get the footage. If it shows that you stole it, and it looks clearly like you, I'd be like, yo, stop wasting. It's clearly you. And I wouldn't say I start wasting my everyone's time. I say, this is clearly you. It looks like you. Mm-hmm. It's most like, I would say if it goes before a judge or a jury, they're probably going to say that's you.
Yeah.
But there's some identification processes. But
yeah.
Like just generally speaking, if it's crystal clear, like the video quality is quite good. I can see myself. I can recognize myself.
Yeah, yeah.
If I see you stealing it, I would say the evidence is pretty clear that it was you, and you wouldn't have a chance at trial. You should plead guilty, accept responsibility, cut your losses, and then pay it back, man. Pay it back. Just, you know, realize, explain why you did it, and maybe I can help you. You know, if you got no money, I'd be like, you know, find a job, and I can give you a suggestion.
Yeah,
you know, like go to the local restaurants and drop your CVs and stuff like
that. So, speaking of stealing stuff, I just heard like a car alarm. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I heard that.
A car alarm sort of went off.
Yeah, I saw that.
You jinxed that.
We shouldn't make assumptions. It may not be stealing. It could be stealing, but it's not our problem. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not our problem unless it's your car, unless it's my car. No, my alarm doesn't sound like that. I actually don't know. I don't think so. But yeah, hopefully it should be. It should be.
Yeah,
fine.
Yeah. So, how much time did you have to like study to like get to, you know, like how much training and studying and stuff, like how much of your life did it take for you to like, you know, get ready for the occupation, you know, like what does it take to be a criminal lawyer?
Well, I think it takes a bit of perseverance, a bit of fortitude. But I think what you're asking is also how long did it take me to study the degree?
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, you need the degree. So it's like you have to get a law degree first, which generally takes about 4 to 5 years. In New Zealand, they make you start out. I'm pretty sure every university makes you start out with a conjoint degree.
Yeah.
So that'll put you at like 4 or 5 years, depending on how much cramming you do. Like if you do summer school, you could cut it down. Yeah, it'll take you about 4 or 5 years, and then you get admitted. I mean, I kind of mucked around a bit in uni, so it wasn't a 4 or 5 year situation, but it was still okay. I was like, I didn't think I would do criminal law. I mean, that was probably the most fascinating thing to me from the beginning. But I didn't start out, like after I graduated in 2018, I didn't start out doing criminal law. I was actually offered a job with a criminal lawyer. But he lived down in Wellington, and I was going to take it, but then I looked him up on Google, and there was some adverse findings. I probably would have done it anyway, but I don't know. It was like a lot because I was pretty young. I was probably your age. Mm-hmm. No, that doesn't make sense. I was like 26. But I was living at home, and I was used to living at home.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was comfortable, and anyway, I didn't take the job. I worked at just like a small firm for like 6 months, and I hated it, and I left after the contract ended. I didn't want to renew it. And then I went to Melbourne for a little bit, trying to make it work there, and then COVID hit, and then I was like, man. So I came back. Just like a week before the borders shut, I came back, and then I came back to New Zealand, and then I found a job working in a firm doing Treaty of Waitangi litigation.
Oh.
Yeah, I did that for about a year and some months.
Yeah.
But I got a bit disillusioned because I felt, I don't want to say too much, but like I felt like I wasn't able to do the meaningful work that I wanted to do. So I left that and I started doing, actually no, they opened a criminal defense, they brought on a criminal defense lawyer, so I did a little bit of work under him, and then I went to a different, and then I got a taste for it, and I was like, all right, this is what I wanted to do. So I started, I got employed by another lady in North Shore, another employer in North Shore, and I started working, I was working for her for about a year and a half, a year and 5 months. And then I left that job, was working for a lawyer in the city, Auckland City, and was there for about 8 months, and I was like, man, this is good, but it's like, not really getting me to the place I want to be. I wanted to do more than that. I don't want to just be like a grunt, a cog in the system. So I quit my job, went to Sri Lanka. I was going to travel the world for a bit, but I just went to Sri Lanka. And then I decided to, and I was going to go elsewhere, but I decided to stay because it had been so long since I'd been to Sri Lanka. I hadn't been back for like 10 years.
Yeah.
So I just stayed there, and I was staying there for about 3 months, and that was really good. I was just, you know, enjoying the life, training, you know, hanging out with my family. I was also trying to start this this business, doing a bit of immigration work. So that was pretty interesting.
We could have got your help, you know.
What's that?
Immigration work.
Yeah. What did you say?
No, like, because like we are immigrants, and like we could have got your help for the immigration work and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think you came like 2020, so
yeah.
I didn't have any experience in immigration at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I came back to New Zealand around April last year.
Yeah.
And then I, in the next 6 months, I like opened my own practice, and then I was in Wellington for those 6 months. So I came back to Auckland, did my exam.
Yeah.
Went down to Wellington, was practicing. I met up with that lawyer that first offered me the job.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was like, okay, I need to get out of my comfort zone and push myself.
Yeah.
So I went to Wellington. I hit that guy. I messaged that guy, and I was like, hey, do you want to work together until I get my own practice running?
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, all right. So we did it, and I got my firm opened up in August. Mm-hmm. End of August, start of September.
Yeah.
And then I met this other lawyer in Levin. He was like, do you want to work with me? And I was like, like at first I was like no, but then I was like I do need a supervisor, and he was doing a lot of like pretty intense work, so it would be a good experience for me. So I just said yes, and I moved to Levin about 3 months ago, and it's been pretty intense. Like there's a lot of work down there, up there. Yeah, so that's me, and I'm just, you know, grinding away, you know, working hard, trying to save up that money, and planning my next move, plotting away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, is it like a very tough, like stressful job to do like criminal law? Like, did you have to deal with like really tough cases, like very like, you know, like serious cases or like very complex cases?
Yeah. Yeah. I've had some pretty complex cases, some pretty nasty ones.
Yeah.
Whew, yeah. Some messed up.
It's a peaceful place, but some nasty things happen in every.
There's a lot of nasty. There's a lot of crazy stuff happening. There's a lot of things happening. Did you know that New Zealand? I think a few years ago I read this, but New Zealand has like the second highest rate of incarceration per person. This is a statistic. America had, I think, as of. I'm not sure if this is the current case, but as of a few years ago, I read that America had the highest rate of incarceration per number of people in the population. New Zealand had the second highest.
Oh.
Yeah. And I was just like, whoa, that's weird. That's really weird.
Yeah, because so when you do like criminal law, was it like mostly like, did you meet any like people who were like your clients, right? Accused clients, right?
Yeah.
Were they mostly like from the demographic over here, or were they like from like other countries?
No, it's mostly Maori and Pakeha,
yeah,
Europeans, like British Kiwis, European, yeah, British Kiwis, I guess that's it.
Yeah,
because that's a majority of the population, right? Mm-hmm. I think 70% of New Zealand is British European New Zealander,
mm-hmm.
or European New Zealander, but it's like they're mostly from Britain, right?
Yeah.
And then I think 14% Maori,
yeah.
But 10 to 14% in the rest is made up of Asians. I mean, I've had one Sri Lankan client.
What did our people do?
Hey, what our people, man? Oh, our people. Oh, man. Our people. Well, not our people, but this guy in particular.
Yeah.
I don't want to. Oh, man. I don't know if I can. I guess it's not. I haven't put a name to it. But yeah, he basically.
Yeah.
No, I shouldn't talk about this.
Yeah.
I mean, I can, because it's not. I haven't,
you haven't named it.
Yeah, I haven't identified him. And I don't think that it can be identified.
You need to think about this.
Yeah,
I'm just thinking about this. Is interesting.
Yeah. Well, I haven't identified him, and there's no way that it can be linked to me unless there's confidential information breach, so I can tell what the nature of the offense
is.
Let's just say it's dishonesty offending. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Okay.
Because I don't want to get into, I just don't want to shoot myself in the foot. So, I'm just going to say it was dishonesty offending.
Yeah, yeah.
And leave it at that.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's like being a criminal lawyer, so my parents, like, for best example, is in my school. Mm. So we were in Sri Lanka.
Mm.
I was at school, right? At school, just learning. And the teacher, just asked, like, what do you want to be in the future from, like, all the kids?
Mm.
And they're like this and that. And the one kid said lawyer, right?
Mm.
And then the teacher was like, started like saying some stuff, and then she went into like, no, he, yeah, it was a male teacher.
Mm.
He went into saying like that, lawyers is like a nasty, like a little profession, mm. because like, some, you might end up defending someone who's like guilty.
Mm.
Like, I'm not saying that it's like a bad job,
mm.
but like, sometimes in some jobs, like especially like as a criminal lawyer,
mm.
like if you, like, as you work with that person, sometimes you may feel like, okay, this guy is actually guilty.
Yeah.
And then you end up like, you do your job and try to defend him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you become successful.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever like feel like,
dirty.
Like, yeah.
If I know the guy's guilty, if he's told, or the woman, if they've told me that they're guilty,
yeah,
then I would usually advise them to plead guilty.
Yeah.
Because if they've told me that they are guilty,
mm.
it's the only natural, there's another course of action, which is that you put the evidence of the prosecution to proof, mm. which is testing the case. Because like, the prosecution had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the accused has done what they've been accused of.
So, what is beyond reasonable doubt?
So it's a good question. And I was looking it up because I was doing a jury trial a few weeks ago, and I was trying to break it down for the jury exactly what it means.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, to simplify it, it's, are you sure?
Oh, yeah.
If it's beyond reasonable doubt, then you can say, I am sure that this person has done this thing. But I was looking into the actual words, reasonable. It's like reasonable. The root of reasonable, it's like reason, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Reason. And I think that came from ratio. But it's like basically what's correct or good. That's the root that I understood. There's no actual like,
it's ambiguous a little bit.
It is a bit ambiguous, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's what's, because like some people might think what something's reasonable, some people might not.
Yeah.
But just to simplify it, are you sure? If the prosecution can prove, can convince you that they're sure that the accused has done the thing that they've done, then the jury or the judge would have to convict them.
Yeah.
But if they're not sure, if there's a little bit of doubt that makes them not sure, then they shouldn't convict. That's a test. What was your question? Oh, yeah, you're asking if I feel guilty. Well, look, if they tell me that they've done it, then I'd be like, look, you should probably, you should plead guilty.
Plead guilty.
But if they tell me but still want to defend it, I can't put forward an argument that's... I can't put forward the defense that they haven't done it.
Mm.
I can put forward the defense that the prosecution haven't proved their case, but I can't say in court this person didn't do it because that's a lie. I haven't been in that situation. I don't really want to, but that's a necessity because your question is a really good one because, you know, this idea of having to defend someone that... Because I've defended people that I think are guilty.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I think you did it. You're saying you didn't, but I think you did it.
Yeah.
But it's still my job to... Because he's saying that, or they're saying that I didn't do this.
Mm.
But I don't know. I wasn't there.
Yeah.
And I can't assume. I don't want to assume. And assuming is wrong. Because there are cases where evidence is stacked and they still haven't done it.
Yeah.
You know, that people haven't done certain things, even though it might be likely. So, people haven't done it. So
speaking of a case, so my father talked about a case. Like, there's this army guy, right?
Mm.
So he wanted to take out someone.
Yeah.
Right? In Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
He wanted to take someone out.
Yeah.
And he has used a grenade.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But there was a bus in between him and the target, right?
Uh-huh.
And what the defender has done has said that, wait, you can't toss a grenade over like the bus and land it exactly there. Because if this guy wanted to take out that person, like he would wait until the bus went and use that argument.
Yeah.
But then immediately I was like, but wait a minute. This, tossing it under the bus, you know? So, and then my dad was like, that's the thing. And like, you know, that guy knew that that guy was guilty, but then they still try to defend it, you know? And the judge couldn't catch that small thing that you can toss the grenade under the bus.
Mm.
So like, and the judge has... said, was it not guilty? Or, yeah, I think not guilty.
Mm.
So, you know, people can, like, slip through that way. So, like, that's one of the stories that my dad said.
Mm.
You know, so, like, yeah. But, so, what I talk, so, when I ask you, do you feel guilty, sometimes guilty about defending some people when you get to, like, slowly begin to sort of think that, oh, this person actually did this bad crime? It's actually more like you're not sure yourself whether that person done it, you know, and you're trying to, in the end of the day, prevent someone from being wrongfully convicted of a crime that they did not do.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So many people tend to forget that, you know,
yeah.
For let's say a rape case and somebody's, you know, accused of, hey, you did this to her. This is really bad. And you know, their whole life is like stained, right? It's not just jail time. It's just the stain on the life. And then if they do get remanded, you know, the prison inmates can treat them badly. So when you are a defensive lawyer and you do find reason to show that, wait, this guy is not guilty, you know, you can actually like save people's like entire lives.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah.
Because what's it worth living if you, like, you know, have that stain on you for the rest of your life? You know, you want to get rid of it.
Yeah, 100%.
Man. Yeah.
100%.
Especially if you haven't done it. If you haven't done that crime.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, people who haven't done the crime, when they're accused by every angle, do they sometimes, like, cave in?
So I've heard stories of that, yeah. Wrongful admissions. Sometimes there's too much pressure. Some of my clients accept... I mean, not my clients. I've heard of people accepting things that they haven't done just to make things easier.
Yeah.
You're right that an accusation can destroy someone's life.
Yeah.
Especially a rape accusation.
Oh, yeah.
And although, you know, raping someone is bad, it's not a good horrible thing.
Yeah.
But also convicting someone wrongfully for rape is...
Is...
I don't know if... I don't know if it's worse, but let's just say it's really bad as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So... It's really important for every defense lawyer to be able to exercise all the knowledge and all the expertise they have to the best of their ability to defend a person within the confines of the law. Like just to apply the law as much as they can, regardless of whether I think that this person's done it. I don't know if this person's done it. I might have suspicions, but it's not my... I can't know for certain unless they tell me. If they don't, if they say they haven't done it, then my job is to put their story forward before the judge or the jury and let them decide. My job is to utilize my knowledge of the law.
Yeah.
All the defenses available. There are a lot of rules in the law. I think maybe too many. But I think they're there for a reason. They're obviously there for a reason. But my job is to utilize my knowledge of the law, put forward my client's story, their case, because they don't know how the system operates. In an ideal world, they would be able to represent themselves, but it's not that world. We don't live in that world.
Yeah, yeah.
But you have to train, you have to learn about the law and learn about the rules. And that's just the way it is. And whether that's fair or not, I think that, you know, in an ideal world, everyone can defend themselves and they wouldn't need the lawyer. They wouldn't need this intermediary to explain the rules. You know, in a functioning society, everyone should be able to know the rules. They should be so straightforward that they can apply it and they can practice without having to study for 4 or 5 years. What I do is I just do my best, and I don't assume. You know, I don't assume. I put the case to the judges, the jury. If I think that my client's case is bad, I'd be like, yo, this is bad. This is weak for this reason. You need to explain why, or understand that you're probably going to be found guilty. That's generally, I would identify the flaws in their defense, put it to them, get an explanation, and proceed from there. But I won't, you know, put rose colored glasses on and be like, hey man, you're going to get off. You know, if there are holes in the case, I'd explain it to them. And if it feels like, I'd assess the evidence and I'd give advice accordingly. So if I think that they would be found guilty at trial, I would tell them. I think that I would tell them if this goes to trial and this evidence is presented in this way, I believe that you'll be found guilty. And then my advice would be, you know, think about an early guilty plea. That's my advice. If I think that they have a solid defense and they should defend it, and this, I would tell them. But it's better to let 100 guilty men or guilty women go free, or guilty people to go free, than to convict one wrongful person. Although the idea of having all these guilty people free is not nice. But incarcerating and punishing someone that's not guilty is like a terrible, terrible thing. I think that's
the whole point of having a law. First, we have a law. So from what I understand, first we have a law and systems like this to prevent a revenge, right? Because some people, right? If let's say there is no law, you know, how will you prevent someone from other people from like attacking you? It's either like arming yourself or like, you know, like doing something like that. So A, the law is there to prevent revenge, and B, the law is also there to prevent like wrongful convictions, right? And like prevent like false accusations. Even sometimes the false accusation, like the person accusing that person, sometimes they think that they are correct, but they are not, you know? So you have cases like that. But another thing is, like, in law, I was thinking, like, are most of them, like, from accidents? Like, most of your cases, accidents, or are they, like, intentionally, like, things have happened and that?
It's a mixture. It's a mixture.
So
people don't accidentally do things, but they get carried away emotionally, or they just don't care enough about the rules. And they just do things in contravention of the rules. Or it's usually inability to control one's emotions and then acting out that emotional outburst in a negative way. So Ali said that the law is about protecting from revenge and protecting from wrongful convictions. It's the essential element of the law is to prevent, to protect the order of society. So it's like keep some kind of order so everyone can live a peaceful life. So we don't have to arm ourselves, as you said. We don't, like, you know, we don't have,
like in America,
we don't have to have guns to defend ourselves because, you know, we have the police. But some cases, yeah, it's, I don't know, like the American ideal, it's not a bad one. Like, I mean, yes, having everyone armed can be problematic, but
yeah,
just simply relying on others to protect you is also concerning.
Yeah, there's like a you had to weigh that out,
yeah,
in a certain way.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, arming yourself for like home defense, you know?
Yeah.
Or to just, because like they are like, if it's a very large area, mm, and you can't police that enormous area,
exactly,
you know,
yeah,
you might have to take defense into your own hands.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
But then...
Just remember, self-defense, you can only, you can use reasonable force in the circumstances that you believe are reasonable.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're allowed, that's a defense under the Crimes Act. I forgot the section, but it's in the Crimes Act 1961.
Yeah.
You can look it up. Yeah, you can use reasonable force in the circumstances that you think are reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a defense to applying force to someone else. I'm just going to look up the section because...
Yeah.
It's a good one to know, but yeah. Yeah, totally get your point. If a place cannot be policed effectively, then Section 48, self-defense and defense of another. You can also defend someone else if you believe that the force... Section 48, everyone is justified in using in the defense of himself or herself or another such force as in the circumstances as he or she believes them to be, it is reasonable to use. So there's like two prongs there. You can use... You can use force that, let's say I was to attack you, right?
Yeah,
now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You can use force that you believe in this circumstance is reasonable to use. So what that means is that if you believe it's reasonable for you to pick up that mug and hit me on the head because I'm attacking you,
yeah,
then you're justified to do that. But you have to prove that, because one would ask, why don't you use your hands? Why don't you run away? Well,
yeah,
you can say, oh, maybe I'm bigger than you. Maybe,
yeah,
I'm blocking the exit.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm...
you have a weapon on you.
Yeah, maybe,
yeah,
I've got a weapon, and your only recourse is to use that mug to smack me over the head and run away.
Yeah, and to save my life.
Save
or,
your life,
you
exactly.
Know.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, in those cases, there's self-defense there, but it's hard, you know, it can be hard to argue sometimes. You,
mm-hmm,
have to give evidence, but, yeah, it's competing interests.
Yeah.
Self-defense argument, you know, you got to wonder, like... Yeah, they are vast areas with a lot of people,
mm-hmm,
and some of them, you know, can maybe doing bad things. And can they all be watched at the same time?
Yeah,
it's a question to ask.
So, yeah, so that's law. So, what do you say to, like, you know? So my dad, right?
Mm-hmm.
He finds like reasons why some of his patients, so he has worked in the ICU, intensive care unit in Sri Lanka,
mm,
right?
Mm.
And sometimes really, really bad things happen.
Mm.
So like one guy came, his arms and legs were chopped off.
Wow.
Like that bad.
That,
why? Because what the people said was like, he went into a town and were like attacking the people there. Right?
Yeah.
So something just brutal like that, just brutal. One case, right? And like my dad had to stitch this guy up and keep him alive.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And he did.
Wow.
And...
So his arms and legs were cut off.
Yeah.
Mm.
So... So things like that. So... But then there are other cases where it's... just by accident, you know, some people burn themselves,
mm,
some people, you know, just hurt themselves, but then it's life altering.
Mm.
And then he would come home and he would tell me, like, hey, like, you need to be careful of these things, you know,
mm,
you need to have these things, like, when you're doing this thing, you have to be careful not to do it in this way,
mm,
and like all that.
Mm.
What would your advice be to people to not, hopefully not find them in a place where they can't defend themselves from, let's say, a wrongful accusation? Like, if something happens, because something can happen, right?
Mm.
What are the sort of steps that, you know, would help, like, have, like, evidence for oneself,
mm,
that you could use to defend yourself against a certain problem, like a wrongful accusation or something like that?
Well, a wrongful accusation.
Maybe like using, like, let's say you're driving and you have a GoPro in your car, so like you can, like, you have evidence.
I think that's a bit too much, because you don't want to be living life in a bubble. You don't want to be too cautious.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to be, you don't want to be, careful. You don't want to be too careful, because you still want to live life.
Yeah.
But you don't want to be so naive to think that other people won't level false accusations against you or try to bring you down. Because people will. Like, if you do good things or you try to succeed and you do succeed, other people are going to try to bring you down. But also, if we're talking about wrongful accusations, if someone makes a wrongful accusation against you, they obviously do it for a negative reason. Whatever reason that is, you have to understand there are people with negative intentions in this world.
Yeah.
And they will have negative intentions for you. There are also people with good intentions for you. You got to recognize that. You can't be, you don't be mistrusting of everyone, but my philosophy, I try to trust people.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if they break that trust, then I'm like, all right, I don't trust this person.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just be careful.
But yeah.
I try
and talk with that person. Like, why did you do this? You know, they might.
Sometimes I'll just like write them off.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I care about them, or if I want to maintain the relationship, then I'll be like, why did you do that? Like, what's going on? And I do that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But don't be so like fearful of the world, because it's a good place. The world is a good place.
Yeah.
But it can be dangerous sometimes, but it's good to experience it. It's good to experience it. Sometimes you won't learn about the bad things until you just experience life.
Yeah.
So my advice is just be aware. Like, be aware that there are people that want bad things, will want bad things for you. And if you do try to do good things, they'll try to bring you down. But not everyone's like that. There are also, I believe, an equal number of people, or maybe greater, that will want good things for you.
Yeah.
And sometimes these bad people are these people that want bad things for you, they're not necessarily bad. Maybe they're just hurting.
Yeah.
Maybe they're in a bad place. Maybe they just, you know, need a bit of love. And maybe you can give that to them.
Yeah, yeah.
But don't be naive. Just be careful, because some people, you know, I don't know about evil, man. I don't know about evil. Like, you know, I don't know about evil people. But I've met some people that have done, like, some pretty bad things. And I don't know if they're, like, beyond saving. It's not my job to save
beyond them. Redemption.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's what prisons are for, right? To, like, keep them locked away. Like, those are the lifers. I've seen some people do some messed up stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't think that, I don't think they can be redeemed.
Like, you look like you have some like PTSD from all of that.
Yeah, man. I've seen some pretty nasty stuff. I won't talk about it, but
I understand that.
I mean, I can, but I don't want to, because I don't want to, I don't know. I mean, it's just like some people have done some real bad stuff for no good reason. And
I understand that.
Yeah, so there are people out there.
And,
you know, you have to be careful. Like, you have to just be careful, but just be aware. Like, people won't come at you for no reason. I mean, I don't know.
Sometimes.
Yeah, just be able to defend yourself. I think you should be in a position to defend yourself at all times.
Yeah.
Don't be overly alert. Don't be like heightened all the time, but be aware. Surround yourself with good people. You know, have a team with you, have your family. Those are the really important things. People that you love, that you trust, you know, be around them. It provides you with some good energy around you, good defenses. If you're by yourself, just, you know, watch your back. Watch your back at all times. Protect your neck.
So I think it's almost 7.
Yeah.
And yeah, we should round this up.
Oh, it's very good talking to you, man.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having. So this is Avindu, and thanks. I'm very happy to have you.
Thank you.
And so we learned about what it's like to be a lawyer, what kind of like experiences you had with the law, and like, you know, I can already understand like some of them are like heavy experiences, but then others are not that complicated. But at the end of the day, you're preventing people from being wrongfully accused and all of that. So I think it pays off, and it's worthwhile. It's a worthwhile thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Would you say that? Like, your profession?
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I try to like improve their lives as much as I can.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a necessary thing, because if you think about it, me or you could be accused of anything at any time.
Yeah.
It's important for us to be able to have lawyers that will understand the law.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll probably self-represent, but I probably wouldn't. Like, if it's a serious thing, I would try to get a really experienced lawyer.
Yeah.
But I would hope that they know all the rules and all the... Yeah, there are rules, and it's, I mean, whether you like them or not, there are rules within the system that we live in.
Yeah.
It's important to have someone on your side that knows the rules and can deliver a message clearly, because a very, very important part of any part of life is communication.
Mm.
Communication. When someone is emotionally heightened and their back is against a wall,
mm.
they can't communicate their story.
Yeah.
So having someone that can do that for you is good. Ideally, you can do it yourself, but communicating is important. So I think it's important. It's an important role.
Yeah. All right.
Well, thank you very much. And,
thank you.
You know, I wish you the best. I know we talked about me a lot. Maybe next time we can talk about you and your journeys into engineering or possibly physiotherapy.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We got to end this day.
Yeah. So. All right. So thanks for listening, and this is Why Langa, this is the end.
All right.
Yeah.
Subu alut
arudakweva. Yeah.
that means Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
All right.
Happy New Year.
The harvest season is upon us.
Yeah.